It was a Saturday morning in Waukesha, Wisconsin, May 31st, 2014. The kind of morning that feels safe. The kind of morning where the biggest concern for most parents is whether they remember to put sunscreen on their kids before the soccer game. Greg Thompson, a local cyclist, was riding along Big Bend Road when he saw something in the grass. At first, he thought it was a doll, or maybe a child playing a game. But as he slowed his bike, the doll moved. It was a 12-year-old girl. Her name was Peyton Lautner. She was covered in blood. She had been stabbed 19 times. When Greg knelt beside her, she didn't scream. She didn't cry. She whispered 6 words that would launch one of the most disturbing investigations in American history. "Please help me. They stabbed me." When Greg asked who they were, Peyton gave him 2 names, names of her best friends, Morgan and Anissa. Greg fumbled for his phone with shaking hands. He tried to keep Peyton conscious, talking to her about school, about summer, about anything that might keep her eyes open. Emergency dispatch later said they could hear him crying in the background as he gave the location. Peyton's voice was barely a whisper. "I trusted them," she said. "I thought we were playing." Today we go beyond the headlines of the Slender Man stabbing. We aren't just looking at a crime. We are looking at reality. We are looking at how a digital myth crawled out of the glowing screens of 2 young girls and into the physical world with a kitchen knife. I'm Maya Vale. This is Among Monsters. To understand what happened in Waukesha, we need to slow down and sit with who Morgan Geiser and Anissa Weir were before they became names attached to a crime. Because monsters aren't born fully formed. They are shaped, quietly, over time. Morgan Geiser's inner world was loud, overwhelming, unstable. By the time she was 10 years old, Morgan was already experiencing symptoms that most adults would struggle to articulate, let alone a child. She described hearing voices that told her people wanted to hurt her. She believed classmates were plotting against her. She thought adults could read her thoughts. At night, she saw figures standing in her bedroom. Not shadows, figures. She would wake up screaming, telling her mother about the bad man who stood at the foot of her bed. Her parents tried everything. Nightlights, therapy sessions, reassurances. But Morgan's reality was fracturing in ways no one could see. Her father, Matt Geiser, knew the signs. He had to. He'd been diagnosed with schizophrenia in his early 20s. It was a ghost in the family tree, waiting to manifest. In Morgan, it manifested as a vulnerability to the supernatural. Her brain was wired to see patterns where there were none, to hear voices in the static, to believe that invisible faces were controlling her fate. But Morgan didn't have the language for schizophrenia. What she had instead was fear, imagination, that filled in the blanks. Then there was Anissa Weir. Anissa's world was different, but no less fragile. She craved connection, approval, belonging. Anissa was the kind of child who absorbed the emotional temperature of the room. She could read people, sense what they needed from her, and mold herself to fit. When she met Morgan in 4th grade, she found a soulmate in the weird. They were the outsiders, the girls who didn't fit in middle school, the lip gloss and pop music. They bonded over books, over art, over stories that other kids found disturbing. They found solace in the creepypasta wiki, a corner of the internet dedicated to horror stories. For most kids, these were just scary tales. Digital campfire stories. But for Morgan and Anissa, they became something more. Slenderman didn't just exist online as a character for them. He became deity. He is described as a tall, thin man in a black suit, with no face and several tentacles growing from his back. He haunts the woods. He stalks children. He appears in photographs as a blur, a shadow, a presence just out of frame. For most, he was a campfire story for the digital age, a meme, a piece of internet folklore. But for Morgan, he was a physical presence. She began to believe that Slenderman was watching her, not metaphorically, literally. She told Anissa that she could feel him in her room at night, that he whispered to her, that he was real, and he was waiting. Morgan said that Slenderman told her things, instructions, warnings. She told Anissa that they had to become proxies, servants of Slenderman, to prove their worth and protect their families. Morgan believed that if they didn't kill someone to please him, Slenderman would come for their parents. Psychologists would later call this folie à deux, a shared madness. Morgan provided the delusion. Anissa provided the validation. Together, they built a reality that no adult was monitoring. In the months leading up to the attack, Morgan's notebook became a catalog of horror. She drew Slenderman over and over, tall, faceless, watching. She wrote, "I love killing," in looping cursive. She wrote, "Help me," in jagged letters. She even drew a diagram of a girl with a knife and the words, "He is still here. He is always here." One drawing showed three stick figures, two standing, one on the ground, blood drawn in red marker pooling beneath the prone figure. Her parents saw the drawings. They thought it was a phase, a dark interest in Gothic art, the kind of thing creative kids go through. They didn't see the screams hidden in the ink. Morgan's mother, Angie Geiser, would later testify that she noticed changes in her daughter, but didn't know how to interpret them. Morgan had always been different, quiet, intense, but she was also kind. She loved animals. She read constantly. How could a child who cried when a character died in a book be planning something so monstrous? The answer, experts would later say, was simple. Morgan wasn't planning from a place of cruelty. She was planning from a place of terror. She believed that if she didn't kill, everyone she loved would die. And Anissa? Anissa didn't hear voices. She didn't see Slender Man. But she believed Morgan, and in believing her, she became complicit to the delusion. Peyton Lautner, known as Bella to her friends, was the bridge between the real world and the girl's fantasy. Peyton was Morgan's best friend since fourth grade. She was kind, loyal, and perhaps most importantly, she was the person Morgan felt she could control. Peyton didn't like Slenderman. She told Morgan the stories were creepy and that she didn't want to talk about them. She preferred lighter, fair. Harry Potter, Percy Jackson, the things with heroes and happy endings. But because she loved Morgan, she stayed. She tolerated the weirdness because that's what best friends do. Peyton was chosen not because she was weak, but because she was trusted. The plan was hatched over months. It evolved, morphed, changed shape, depending on Morgan's mood and the severity of her hallucinations. At first, Morgan told Anissa they would kill a stranger, someone random, someone whose death wouldn't be traced back to them. But logistics became a problem. How do you kill a stranger when you're 12 and can't drive? How do you lure someone into the woods without raising suspicion? So they shifted. They decided it had to be someone close. Someone who would follow them without question. Peyton. The original plan was to kill her on the night of May 30th during Morgan's 12th birthday slumber party. The girls had it all mapped out. They would wait until Peyton was asleep. They would duct tape her mouth so she couldn't scream. And then Morgan would stab her in the neck. Quick, efficient, final. But when the night came, Morgan couldn't do it. Not yet. There is a recording of the girls in Morgan's bedroom that night. It was captured accidentally by a tablet left on in the room. You could hear them whispering, giggling, playing with dolls. It sounds like any other sleepover, but underneath the giggles, Morgan and Anissa were negotiating the terms of a murder. "Are you sure you can do it?" Anissa whispered. "I have to," Morgan replied. "He's watching. He's always watching. What if she wakes up?" "She won't. We'll be fast." But they weren't fast. They were terrified. When the moment came, when Peyton was asleep and vulnerable, Morgan froze. She stood over her friend with a knife in her hand and couldn't move. Anissa didn't push. Not yet. They decided to wait until morning. They would go to David's Park. They could play hide and seek, and in the woods, far from the eyes of parents and neighbors, they would make their sacrifice. In their minds, killing Peyton wasn't personal. It was transactional. A sacrifice. They believed once they killed her, they would be free, safe, protected. They believed Slender Man would take them to his mansion in the Nicolet National Forest, where they would live as his chosen servants. It's impossible to overstate how chilling that logic is. Not because it's evil, but because it's sincere. Morgan wrote in her journal the night before the attack, "Tomorrow is the day. I'm scared, but I know it has to be done. He will protect us. We prove ourselves. Bella will understand. Maybe not now, but someday." She genuinely believed Peyton would forgive them. The morning of May 31st, the girls woke up early. They ate breakfast, cereal, toast, orange juice. Morgan's mother asked if they wanted her to drive them to the park. Morgan said no. They wanted to walk. It was a beautiful day. They stopped at the local roller rink first. Peyton loved skating. She glided around the rink, laughing, completely unaware that her two best friends had a knife hidden in a backpack. After skating, they headed to David's Park. It was just after noon. The sun was high. Families were out. Kids were playing on swings and slides. The girls walked past the playground and into a wooded area behind it. They told Peyton they were going to play a game. Peyton, trusting as always, followed. They led her deeper into the trees, far enough that the sounds of the playground faded, far enough that no one would hear. Anissa told Peyton to lie down on the ground and cover herself with leaves. "It's part of the game," she said. "We're playing hide and seek. You have to stay really still." Peyton laughed. She thought it was silly, but she played along. She lay down. She covered herself with sticks and leaves. She closed her eyes. Morgan had the knife, a 5-inch kitchen knife she had taken from her mother's drawer that morning. It had a black handle and a severed edge. She held it behind her back. She hesitated. She later told police she had a nervous breakdown in the woods. She handed the knife to Anissa. Anissa, despite her desires to please Slenderman, couldn't do it either. Her hands were shaking. She handed it back to Morgan. Anissa whispered to Morgan, "Go manic. Do it." And Morgan did. She jumped on Peyton and began stabbing. The first strike hit Peyton's arm. Peyton screamed. She tried to sit up, tried to fight back. She asked, "Why are you doing this? I thought we were friends." Morgan didn't answer. She stabbed again and again. Arms, legs, torso. Peyton's screams turned into gasps. She begged them to stop. She called for help, but there was no one. 19 times. Morgan stabbed her 19 times. One wound missed Peyton's heart by less than a millimeter, the width of a human hair. Another punctured her diaphragm. Another collapsed a lung. Morgan's response, when asked later what Peyton said, she said she couldn't breathe. She said she didn't want to die. And what did Morgan feel in that moment? Nothing. She later said she felt no adrenaline, no anger, no sadness, only obligation. After the final stab, the girl stood up. They didn't help her. They told Peyton to stay still, that they were going to get help. It was a lie to keep her from screaming while they made their escape. They walked away. They didn't run. They stopped at the Big Bend Road Walmart to wash the blood off their hands in the bathroom. They bought granola bars and bottles of water. They looked like two children on a summer hike. Meanwhile, Peyton Lautner was dying. She lay on the forest floor, blood pooling beneath her, her vision blurred, her breathing shallow. Every instinct told her to close her eyes, to give in, and let the darkness take her. But she didn't. Peyton survived because something no plan accounted for. Human will. Despite collapsed lungs, despite blood loss, despite shock, she crawled. She used the trees to pull herself up. She fell. She crawled again. She dragged her body through the dirt and leaves towards the sound of cars on Big Bend Road. She later said she focused on one thought. "I don't want to die." That single thought saved her life. When Greg Thompson found her, he thought he was looking at a corpse. But then Peyton's eyes opened. She whispered those words again. "Please help me." Paramedics arrived within minutes. They stabilized her on site and rushed her to Waukesha Memorial Hospital. Surgeons operated for hours. They said if she had arrived 10 minutes later, she wouldn't have made it. Peyton Lautner survived 19 stab wounds. She survived because she refused to stop fighting. By the time the police found Morgan and Anissa walking along Interstate 94, they were 5 miles from the park. They were carrying a backpack with a bloody knife inside, along with drawings of Slender Man and a change of clothes. The interrogation tapes are some of the most haunting pieces of evidence in modern criminology. When police interviewed Morgan, she was incredibly matter-of-fact. She sat in the chair, her legs dangling because her feet didn't reach the floor. She wore a purple jacket. Her hair was pulled back in a ponytail. She looked small, fragile, like a child. But when she spoke, her voice was eerily calm. "We had to do it," said Morgan. "Slender Man told us to. If we didn't, he would kill our families." Detective Tom Casey, a veteran of the Waukesha Police Department, sat across from her. He asked Morgan to explain who Slender Man was. "He's the leader of the creepypasta," she said. "He's really tall. He doesn't have a face. He has tentacles. He lives in a mansion in the Nicollet National Forest. If you become his proxy, he protects you. But if you don't do what he says, he kills your family." The detective asked her if she felt bad for Peyton. Morgan paused. Her face didn't change. "I don't know," she said. "I guess I feel a little bad, but it had to be done." "Did Peyton do anything to deserve this?" Casey asked. "No. She was just there." Anissa Weir's interrogation was different. She was more technical, more eager to explain. She seemed to be trying to convince the detective that their actions were a logical necessity. Detective Michelle Tresani asked Anissa why they chose Peyton. "Because she trusted us," Anissa said. "It had to be someone who would follow us into the woods. We tried to think of other people, but Peyton made the most sense." "Did you feel bad when you were stabbing her?" "I didn't stab her. Morgan did. I was there." "But you helped plan it?" "Yes, because we had to. Slender Man is real. He watches us. Morgan sees him. I believe her." What struck investigators wasn't cruelty. It was the calm, the detachment. They asked if Peyton survived. Not with relief, not with guilt, with curiosity. "Is she alive?" Morgan asked. "Yes." "Oh," Morgan nodded. "That's good, I guess. But it doesn't really matter. We did what we were supposed to do. The attempt counts." They were waiting for Slender Man to appear to take them away, but he never came. Psychiatrists who evaluated the girls in the days after their arrest were unanimous. Something was deeply, fundamentally wrong. Dr. Kenneth Robbins, a forensic psychiatrist, testified that Morgan exhibited clear signs of early onset schizophrenia. She had a family history. She had symptoms dating back years. She was experiencing command hallucinations, voices telling her what to do, and she genuinely believed a fictional character was real. Morgan wasn't pretending, Dr. Robbins said. She wasn't lying. In her mind, Slender Man was as real as you or me, and the threat he posed to her family was terrifying. Anissa's diagnosis was different, but equally troubling. She didn't have schizophrenia. She had what's called shared psychotic disorder. She adopted Morgan's delusions because she was suggestible, because she wanted to belong, and because she trusted Morgan completely. The public reaction was immediate and explosive. Headlines blamed the internet, horror culture, video games, creepypasta, parents panicked. Schools held assemblies about online safety, but mental health professionals urged caution. Slender Man wasn't the cause. He was the vehicle. The real issue was untreated childhood psychosis, and no safety net strong enough to catch it. The legal battle lasted years. Because of the severity of the crime, both girls were charged as adults with attempted first-degree intentional homicide. They were 12 years old. The decision to charge them as adults sparked national outrage. Advocates argued that children, especially mentally ill children, shouldn't be subjected to adult criminal penalties. Prosecutors countered that the crime was too severe, too calculated, to be treated lightly. In court, the girls looked small, too small for the gravity of what they'd done. Morgan sat quietly, often staring at her hands. Anissa cried during testimony. Both wore civilian clothes instead of prison jumpsuits, a decision meant to remind the jury that these were still children. Morgan's defense attorney, Anthony Cotton, argued that she was not responsible for her actions due to mental disease. He presented evidence of her deteriorating mental health, her drawings, her journal entries, testimony from psychiatrists who said Morgan genuinely believed she was saving her family. The court agreed. In 2017, Morgan was found not guilty by reason of mental disease or defect. She was sentenced to 40 years in a state mental health facility, Winnebago Mental Health Institute. Anissa Weir's case hinged on influence. She wasn't psychotic, but she suffered from a shared delusion disorder. Her attorney, Mara McMahon, argued that Anissa was manipulated by Morgan's illness, that she was a follower, not a leader. In 2017, Anissa pleaded guilty to attempted second-degree intentional homicide as party to a crime with use of a deadly weapon. She was sentenced to 25 years in a mental health facility. But the story didn't end there. In 2021, after nearly 7 years of treatment, Anissa Weir was released under strict supervision. Psychiatrists testified that she had shown remarkable progress. She expressed genuine remorse. She understood the gravity of what she had done. She no longer believed in Slenderman. Her release sparked fierce debate. Victims' rights advocates argued it was too soon, that Peyton deserved more justice. Others argued it proved that rehabilitation was possible. Morgan Geiser remains under supervision at Winnebago. Doctors testify that without her medication, she would likely relapse into delusions within weeks. With it, she shows insight, remorse, awareness of reality. In 2022, Morgan's attorney petitioned for her release. The petition was denied. The court ruled that she still posed a risk to herself and others. And Peyton? Peyton Lautner graduated high school. She went to college. She chose a path far from the media circus that surrounded her name. She gave one interview, just one, in which she said something profoundly simple and profoundly powerful. I don't want people to think of me as a victim. I survived. I'm here and I'm moving forward. She has scars on her body that will never fade. Scars on her arms, her legs, her torso. But she has reclaimed her life. Peyton's parents, Joe and Stacy Lautner, have been vocal advocates for mental health awareness. They've spoken at conferences, written op-eds, and pushed for better screening and intervention programs in schools. If someone had recognized what Morgan was going through, Stacy Lautner said, maybe this never happens. Maybe my daughter doesn't almost die in the woods. This case forces us to sit with an uncomfortable reality. Not all violence is born from hatred. Sometimes it's born from fear, from untreated illness, from children navigating adult darkness without guidance. Slenderman wasn't real, but the danger was. The internet didn't create Morgan's schizophrenia, but it gave her delusion a name, a face, a mythology. And in the absence of intervention, that mythology became a blueprint for violence. Among Monsters exists to remind us that evil isn't always loud. Sometimes it whispers, sometimes it wears a child's face, and sometimes it asks for help long before anyone listens. Morgan Geiser drew pictures of Slender Man for months. She wrote "Help me" in her notebook. She told people she heard voices. The signs were there, but no one knew how to read them. This isn't a story about the internet. It's not a story about horror culture or bad parenting or evil children. It's a story about what happens when mental illness goes untreated, when isolation replaces connection, when fantasy becomes indistinguishable from reality. Morgan and Anissa weren't monsters. They were children in crisis, and Peyton paid the price. I'm Maya Vale, and this is Among Monsters.